Was saying before, a while back, we had we were listening to this song, "I Am Free," and we both agreed what a wonderful worship song that would be during during corporate worship. And since I usually don't go to the worship team and advise them of their content, since they don't come to me and advise me of my content. that's the deal. That's the deal we have, the unspoken word we got going with one another. I was delighted to see that Pete had played that. So Pete, you can play that anytime. All right. I was a little bit late coming up because Paul Nelson was just telling me he was bragging on his daughter. And for good cause. Y'all know Mary. She grew up here in this house. And she is a senior at Riken. And I was just being told that Mary won the Daughters of American Revolution Award for Citizenship. She's in the top 5% in Maryland for academic achievement. And she won the Presidential Award for Academic Achievement. So, Mary, I know, yeah. What an excellent thing. What a just a fine woman of God she's grown up to be. And she is a testimony to the people in the community. So I'm really grateful for her and for her family throughout the years being faithful here in this church. All right. Today, I want to introduce you to the entrance of a very difficult path. It's a path that few of us really fully explore, even if and perhaps especially if we're believers. It's a path that as humans we are experts at hiding in the deepest, darkest recesses of our hearts. We have allowed these thorny vines, the bushes, the brambles to grow over the entrance to this path to the point that sometimes we may no longer even see it. Or maybe we just don't want to see it because of the consequences of knowing that it's there. And the prospect of taking this path may be a little bit too much for us to comprehend. As such, it's really only a path that I can introduce you to. I can maybe hack away at the brambles a little bit and show you the entrance of the path. But in the end, it's up to you, along with the help of the wonderful counselor, to go and decide to walk down this path. It's not a path that's always one of beauty. You're often forced to look at your own pain, to wrestle it, to embrace it, and ultimately to surrender it. It's a path that sometimes can be hazardous and challenging. But ultimately, it's a path that leads to beauty and to freedom. Now, at this point, I know that most of you are curious. You're going, what the heck is he talking about? We're going to get there. But before we do, there are these two wicked personality traits that I want to introduce you to. They're symptomatic of the disease that we have to let the Lord cure. And these two personality traits are often what drives the dysfunctional part of our character. So these three things, the two traits, and the one that fuels it all, can really define who we are if we don't learn to surrender them. Last time I preached about surrender, whenever it was, a month and a half or so ago, today we're going to look at two specific traits and one catalyst behind them that need to be dealt with. They need to be surrendered to the Lord. They have to be surrendered to the Lord if we have any hope of living in freedom, if we have any hope of walking out the destiny to which we've been called. You know, we had the song up before that I was just talking about, "I Am Free." And that's great, we are free. But we need to deal with some things to walk them out so that we truly are free. We're not just singing about it. Now, any of these three things can be discussed in several sermons, and frankly, they have been. In fact, I even preached on one of them. My goal today is to provide an overview of each one, then tie them together so that you can make a connection between each. I really hope to remove the veil that may be blinding us from the truth. Then I plan to offer some practical tips to help start walking down that path that I alluded to. Now, some of this, by the way, may be, as we go through this, may be self-disclosure. Some of you may be shocked that I think some of the things that I think. But as always, I want to try to put this in the proper context. Hello, Rhonda. What? Good morning. And the context is being a genuine disciple of Christ. We can't really be true disciples of Christ if we don't tackle these things and take them head on. So what are these two things? Well, the first is judging. I have come to learn that I judge in more ways than I care to admit. Dozens of times a day, I find myself casting an opinion in my mind about how a person looks, what a person says, what a person does. What an idiot, what a doofus. Yesterday, I found myself judging a man who has been dead for 5 years. That is no lie. Exactly. The reality is that we don't know what's going on with these people. Well, I mean, in the case of the dead guy, I know, you know, nothing. But you know, I don't know their pain. I just choose to judge them. This issue of judging has become like a second nature to me, so much so that I don't even realize that I'm doing it. I really have to think about it and be conscious of what I am thinking and how I'm judging. Okay, so how is it that we judge? What do we judge? Well, we judge just about everything. We judge the greed of men who, in our opinion, are feeding off the needy. We judge the poor who, in our opinion, need to go out and get a job. We judge the teenager who should pull up his pants, dye his hair a normal color, and remove the piercings from his body. We judge the way someone speaks, the color of their skin, the size of their waistline, the church that they attend, the political views that they hold, the way they look, even if they couldn't possibly control that. We judge people's actions, if it isn't the actions that we would take. We judge the wife beater, the sexual abuser, the cigarette smoker, the homeless. We judge the fellow congregant because they don't ever seem to grow spiritually. We judge our neighbor, our coworker, our pastor, our boss. We pass judgment on the physically awkward and the socially awkward. We have well-understood names for people. And so some of these names I'm about to lay on you, they're a little bit dated by my generation. You can translate them into yours if you like. We have names like geek, jocks, head, dweebs, right? So the real question is not what is it that we judge, but what is it that we don't judge? We judge just about anything that you can name. And you see the irony here is we pass judgment even though we have absolutely no right to. The one person who walked on earth, who had every right to, did not. Let's check out what John, huh? Oh, it's up there already. Well, there it is, John 12, chapter 47. As for the person who hears my words but does not keep them, I do not judge him. This is Jesus talking. This stuff is in red. For I did not come to judge the world, but to save it. We have no right to judge, and yet we do so. We are the created who are judging the created. But wait, there's more. We're not happy with judging the created. We also have to go on and judge the Creator. We do that all the time. We judge God and His motives all the time. Now, God has made a deal with us when it comes to judging. It can be found in Matthew 7, starting in verse 1. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. So here's the deal. If you judge, you will be judged. But wait, there's more. In the same way that you judge, you will be judged. So in other words, you will be judged by the same standard by which you pass judgment over others. I'm going to repeat that because that bears repeating. You will be judged by the same standard by which you pass judgment over others. Okay, now, this causes me to do the proverbial Japanese tea suck. You know what that is? Ooh, very difficult. Right? See, I don't want to be judged by the standard by which I judge. So since I don't, I better start changing the standard by which I judge. And this kind of begs the question, well, can we judge? Can I judge? Can you? In Matthew 7, it says not to judge. But in John 7:24, it kind of leaves the door open. John 7:24 says this, do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment. Okay, so to judge or not to judge? Which is it? Well, it's in the Bible, so both must be true. So let's figure it out. Do not be judging if you can't do it righteously. That seems pretty clear. You see, it's all about motivation. There are two motivations in judging. The first is when we're motivated by pain. Now, as you probably suspect, when we judge from a place of pain, we judge unrighteously. Passing judgment from a place of pain makes us feel better for a little while. Because, you know, if we deem others unworthy in some way, then, well, maybe we're not so bad. But the thing about judging others so that we can feel better about ourselves is that this is only a temporary fix. It is a topical anesthetic that does not deal with the underlying pain. The second is when we're motivated by love, when we're motivated by true, selfless, pure love, the kind of love that motivated Jesus. Then we can judge righteously. Okay, but here's the paradox. If we are truly motivated by the love that comes from God, then we'll be motivated to live as a disciple of Christ who did not judge. So in other words, if we're truly motivated by love, then we can probably judge righteously, but we would choose not to because we would want to be like Christ. With me? If we choose to be like Christ, we would choose not to judge. I mean, we may be free to, but is it really profitable? Let's choose to be discerning instead of judging. Let's choose to have the mind of God. So the next time some negative thought comes running through your head and you're passing judgment on somebody else, I want you to play this tape in your head. As I was thinking about this message, in fact, it was a week or two ago, as here in the sanctuary, I was thinking about this message. This thought came to me. And so play this tape in your head. Next time you want to be thinking negative or judging somebody, think of Jesus just saying to you, "Hey, just love them. Don't pass judgment on them. Just love them." All right. That was judging. That was the first one. The second one. Unforgiveness. I'm changing up. No, there's two, and then we got to talk about the catalyst afterwards. So, unforgiveness. Yeah, I'm talking. These are the two symptoms in the catalyst, right? So we got judging, and now unforgiveness, and then after that, we're going to talk about the other thing. I have preached before on this topic of unforgiveness. But I don't know if I didn't learn it well enough or you all didn't or what. So I'm going to pick it up again. Forgiveness is extremely important to the Lord. Why is this? Because if we're going to be like Him, then we have to do what He does. And this is what He does. He forgives. You see, the New Covenant, the New Testament, wouldn't even exist if God hadn't chosen to forgive. And because He did, our lives have been redeemed. And so, because He does, as His disciples, that's what we should do as well. I direct your attention to Matthew 6, starting in verse 14. "For if you forgive men when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive men their sins, your Father will not forgive your sins." So the way the Lord deals with us regarding unforgiveness is pretty much the same way He deals with us regarding judging. This is what I call what's good for the goose is good for the gander parenting technique. He has set an example for us, and He wants us to follow. And if we choose not to follow His standard, then He will hold us accountable according to ours. Okay, this is another one that bears repeating. If we choose not to follow His standard, then He will hold us accountable according to ours. This is a pretty sobering reality. So let's learn to forgive. There are a few important things that's worth remembering when it comes to forgiveness, or unforgiveness, really. First, it's important to remember that your unforgiveness hurts you much more than it hurts the offender. Okay? Somebody said this once, a friend of mine, and I've said it before from the pulpit, is unforgiveness is the poison you take hoping that your enemy will die. Okay? The one who offended you is not thinking about his offense against you. It's not bothering him. I mean, if it was, he'd come and ask for forgiveness, wouldn't he? But it isn't bothering them. The second thing is, it doesn't matter what the offender has done. And in fact, the worse the offense, the more you're going to have to deal with this thing of unforgiveness. Because otherwise, It will eat you alive inside. It will gut you. Third, to clarify what forgiveness is, we should also be clear on what forgiveness is not. It does not mean that the offender does not pay for the consequences of their actions. You may forgive the sex abuser who hurt you or your family, but they still have to do the time. However, it does mean that you're willing to release that responsibility to the Lord. Forgiveness does not mean that you have to trust that person again in the future. Forgiveness does not mean that you will forget. Have you ever heard somebody say this? If you say you forgive but you don't forget, well, that means that you really don't forgive. Some super spiritual person laid that one on you probably one time, right? That is just nonsense. People who have lost a loved one to some monster may successfully forgive them, but they're never going to forget that incident. Forgiveness does not mean that you have to establish a relationship with the offender. It does mean, however, that you're available to the Lord to be a blessing to them. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. That you're available to be a blessing to them if He asks. And by the way, expect Him to ask. Forgiveness does not mean that you're no longer angry, but deciding that you're going to take that anger and you're going to use it to some constructive end, rather than a destructive end. As an example, did you know that most people who are counselors because they have been victims of abuse? See, that's taking your anger and turning it into something positive, something that people can really use. Forgiveness is not about letting someone off the hook. It's about freeing yourself. Forgiveness is simply letting go. It is releasing it to God. It is about releasing your pain. It's about letting go of your expectation that the offender should come to you and seek your forgiveness, because it's not going to happen. There is incredible power in forgiveness. It truly sets you free in ways that you could never have imagined. Because unforgiveness, it stunts your spiritual growth. And does so in such a way that you eventually shrivel up and die spiritually. But the simple act of forgiveness frees you and lets you grow into the destiny to which you've been called. See, forgiveness fosters spiritual growth. Now, before we move into the practical steps for forgiveness, I want to make one more point. Forgiving includes forgiving yourself. Forgiving includes forgiving yourself. You don't get to experience true freedom or the power of forgiving by forgiving others, but then not forgiving yourself. All right, so give yourself some slack. How long will you decide to continue beating yourself up? I want to quickly touch upon these steps to help facilitate forgiveness. So if unforgiveness is a problem to you, listen up. First,
acknowledge the pain and the anger and the disappointment. It's okay to say, ow, that hurt. Why did she have to do that? That really hurt. Whatever it is, acknowledge the emotion. Say it out loud if you need to. In fact, you can scream it if you want to. But acknowledge it. Second, decide to forgive. Say to yourself, you know what? Life is too short to go walking around with all this negative energy. And so I'm going to decide to forgive. I have not forgiven yet, but I'm making this decision that I'm going to. Next, turn to the Lord for help. Lord, this is really bumming me out, and I don't like feeling this way. I need your help to get this behind me. Help me, help me, help me forgive. Next, take the step to forgive. Release it to God. Now, this can be the hardest step. I think really the next step is probably the hardest, but this can be the hardest step. But it's okay if you do it repeatedly. You may say, I forgive that person 1,000 times because you have taken it back 999 times. All right? It's all right. Finally, choose to bless the offender through some act of kindness. Now, this step is really for you. It's not for the offender. Because this demonstrates to you that genuine forgiveness has taken place. Now, as you practice these steps, they'll become more natural for you and they'll be easier to go through. I have a friend who can go through these steps all at once. He's so practiced at forgiveness. Now, obviously, the larger the offense, the longer it may take and the more deliberate you'll have to proceed through each of these steps. But for the daily stuff in which you can build an offense, you can go through what my friend calls instant forgiveness. Instant forgiveness. Because, you know, what's the point of ruining your day? Just forgive, let it go, release them, bless them, and move on. See? That way you haven't shot a day. All right? So bless the person and move on. All right. The punchline. We're finally here. So we've discussed judging. We've discussed unforgiveness. But what is the catalyst behind them? What is the thing that fuels these raging fires? Well, it is simply anger. More often than we care to admit, it is anger that drives our actions and our attitudes. We may not be walking around red-faced and yelling, but inside there is this ball of rage that drives us. And it comes out in the most unusual and unhealthy ways. Anger causes us to judge more and to forgive less. It causes us to speak sarcastically and in harsh tones. It causes us to be more impatient and less tolerant. Anger can consume us if we let it, and it will express itself in mainly unhealthy ways. I mean, as I said before, it can express itself in healthy ways too, but it usually expresses itself in unhealthy ways. Does it ever seem that in our quest for more material comforts, we have lost our sense of family and community? We have lost our sense of connectedness, so we are apparently incapable of appropriately giving or receiving validation. We live in a culture where We have become accustomed to getting what we want right away. We want everything now. And when that doesn't happen, we can feel rejected and become angry. According to Drs. Carter and Manerth, anger is most often ignited when the person perceives rejection or invalidation. Note the key word here. It's about perception. It's all about perception of the one who is offended. In other words, your perception may not at all reflect reality. Imagine that. So becoming less angry may be as simple as adjusting our perceptions. There are two problems with trying to get your needs met or seeking validation from people. First, they are imperfect beings who won't measure up to your expectations. And second, your perceptions of their intentions may not be accurate. You can spend so much of your time focusing on the messages of these people that you forget to focus on the messages that are being sent to you by the Heavenly Father, by our Creator. Because He's the guy who made you, and He wants to meet your needs. He wants to give you messages of validation and affirmation. It's important to focus on the validation we get from God and not from the daily barrage of messages that we might get from people, or at least our perceptions of those messages. If you spend your time listening to the messages of the world, you're going to be disappointed, which will lead to pain, which in turn will lead to anger, which will lead to judgment and unforgiveness and bitterness and death, and there's nothing beyond that. Okay? It just takes you down this horrid path. But in relationship with God, He's able to meet all your needs. You want to know how I know that? Because it says so in the Bible. Philippians 4:19 says this, "And my God will meet all your needs according to His glorious riches in Christ Jesus." God is able to meet all your needs. It's all just about trusting Him. There are a few things that we can do in order to help manage our anger. I should mention that there is an excellent book available regarding anger. I alluded to the authors before, Drs. Carter and Manerth. It's called The Anger Workbook. It's really good. So if out of this you decide, hey, I am angry, even though I don't like to admit it, even though I'm not running around screaming like a raging lunatic, but you want to explore the topic in a little bit more depth, they go through this 13-step process, and I'll tell you, this is really an excellent book. Okay, it's a guy who's gone through it. Yes, because I needed to. It's really a helpful book. But there are some things that are in this book that I'd like to touch upon right now that may be helpful to you. So just a few steps in managing anger. The first, recognize deep-rooted anger. Okay? Admission is right like 90% of the problem, so recognize the deep-rooted anger. Now, just in case you're not, you may not be around, as I said before, running around red-faced and screaming all the time, does not mean that you don't have anger issues. So just admit it. Okay, yeah. Recognize the symptoms, the secondary effects of anger. Okay, this may help you decide whether you're angry or not. Okay, anger causes judgmentalism. Anger causes unforgiveness. Anger causes self-destructive behavior. Anger causes fear. Anger causes physical health problems. Understand the choices. The next step is understand the choices you have as an expression of anger. Now, what does that mean? There are five ways to respond to anger. And yes, all of you are going to fit into the one of these five ways. So note which one you are. Some of you may be more than one. I know that I'm more than one. Aggressiveness. This is the red-faced yelling type. A passiveness or suppression. This is the type who they say absolutely nothing. They stuff it down deep. You know, they're like in a fetal position in the corner, right? Until they decide that they're going to get a semiotic weapon and start shooting up the place, right? Until they just simply explode. Okay? There's the passive-aggressive type. This is the sarcastic type. Like whatever is coming out of their tongue, I mean, they're not like raging or anything, but whatever out of their tongue is like stabbing you in the heart. Assertiveness. This is a healthy response to anger. This is speaking your mind honestly, in control, and with clarity about your feelings. It is disagreeing and confronting without being disagreeable. Right? The let it go type. This also is a healthy response to anger, as long as it's truly letting it go. By the grace of God, this is releasing it, putting aside, and moving on. Katrina's like that. She's a good let it go type. She'll be angry for a little while, and then she just lets it go. Meanwhile, I'm still fuming about it. Next, become less dependent on others so your anger management becomes internally directed, not externally determined. Right, this is about assuming responsibility for your own anger. Depend less on others for your emotional disposition, because depending on others for your emotional disposition is never a good idea. Get your identity from God. Trust in Him to meet your needs, and you won't be as dependent on the capricious nature of other people. Next, now finally, don't rationalize your anger, but accept responsibility for it. Don't be a victim and blame someone else for your anger. Remember, no one can make you angry. Or any other emotion for that matter. Accept responsibility for your own emotions. All right, let's wrap this up. We did a very quick overview of anger and the two most prevalent symptoms of anger, which is judging and unforgiveness. All three keep us from our appointed destiny in the Lord and hold us in bondage. All three can be managed effectively, but the choice is ours. We are not always able to control the events in our life, but we are always able to control our response to those events. We can choose to be angry and bitter, or we can choose to turn to God and walk it out with Him. So please stand. Some of this stuff may have resonated with you today. As I said, I could only really cut away the brambles a little bit to show you the entrance to the path. You're going to have to walk through this. It's between you and the Holy Spirit. And as I said at the beginning, a path isn't always fun. Just like everything, the process isn't always fun. But the fruit can be very sweet. Was this from you, Nikki? Why don't you come on up here and read this? I don't even know what it says. Not because I can't read it. It's just that I don't read in front of you. It's rude. So I trust Nikki that it's going to be an appropriate word for what we're talking about.
This is what I got when I was standing there. The Lord gave this to me. All I could see is someone's feet as they stood in the sand. Thinking the steps you take will be seen if only for a while, for there behind him are footsteps in the wet sand. But as he takes the next step, he's walking on concrete, which each step is permanently left. Then I heard the Lord's voice. Love, understand, all that you do leaves a lasting impression on others and yourself. Be wary where you go. No word said, no action done does not have repercussions. So love, do as I do, and your steps will lead toward me, and others will follow.
All right. That's the just love them part of it, right? All right, so Kenny, can you get some music going up there? This may be something that you need to just deal with the Lord just one-on-one. However, if any of this struck a chord with you and you would like someone to stand with you, pray with you over this, then we are available. Katrina, if you would come forward. Nikki? Yeah, thanks, Don.
I just get the sense that there's a lot of things that we say, yeah, I'm going to take care of, and just taking the first step, if you feel like this spoke to you, that there's anger, that there's something that you want to address before the Lord. Just coming up and having someone agree with you in prayer is taking the first step.
So if any of this speaks to you, there are folks here that are available to serve you, pray with you. Otherwise, you're dismissed. You can go. I assume that we're having a snack and yak today. So you're dismissed to go down, and I'll see you down.